Hello, everybody. I'm Radio Johnny, and you're listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Pullman. Recovery Radio is an outreach of the Latah and Whitman recovery communities. You can find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. The Latah Recovery Community is located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. The Whitman Recovery Community is located at 226 East Main Street in Pullman, and you can contact the WRC by phone at 509-715-1111 or by email at wrccprogrammanager, that's wrccprogrammanager@gmail.com. Their current hours are 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. And Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addiction and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continued recovery. And like I said earlier, I am Radio Johnny, and joining me in the studio slash conference room is the ever important and outstanding Miss Denise.
Hello, Denise. Thank you, Johnny. That's such a nice welcoming. Hello, everyone. Glad you're listening today.
Yes, we are glad, and it's always good to be here as opposed to anywhere else.
Perfect.
That's my opinion. I'm sticking to it.
Yep. No, this is good.
And the June calendar is out. You can find it at the LatahRecoveryCenter.org website and see all the offerings that are going on there. And today's show, we're going to do something crazy. I discovered on the web that there's something called the 7 R's of Recovery. And I think that comes from SAMHSA or one of those other government organizations that kind of have laid it out. So I'm going to dive into this. Here is what are the 7 R's of recovery. The 7 R's, as in the letter R, not the pirate R, the 7 R's of recovery framework guides individuals in their recovery journey, particularly in the context of addiction, mental health, or other challenges. These include recognition, responsibility, regret, restitution, recovery planning, relapse prevention, and reconnection. This framework emphasizes acknowledging the problem, taking ownership, expressing remorse, making amends, and developing a plan for recovery, implementing strategies to prevent relapse, and building a support network. So that's just as a header, that kind of sounds like everything you do as a recovery coach.
It does. It does. And also things that I do in my own recovery. Yeah. Very helpful. I'm glad that you found this. I may or may not have heard it before, but I've definitely heard of each of these individually.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I've never seen them just put together like that.
Yeah, so, no, it's really good.
So let's dive into it. Recognition, acknowledging the existence of a problem and a need for a change. In my program, Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, we talk about the first step as admitting you're powerless over alcohol and your life has become unmanageable. Mm-hmm. But even before the first step comes that recognition.
Yeah.
You know, that concern expressed by family and friends that maybe you're drinking too much. That nudge from the judge when maybe you get arrested for driving under the influence. That you might have a problem with it. But it's one thing for other people to recognize and to point it out to you. It's a whole nother thing to accept it. And like they say here, acknowledging the existence of a problem and a need for change.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that, Ms. Denise?
Well, to just kind of add on to what you said, and I don't know that this necessarily falls on what they're thinking. But in my mind, recognizing it and saying it out loud to another person is extremely helpful. I think that we can internally be like, recognize something, be like, oh goodness, this is really hard. But I think the next step in that that can be really helpful, I'd like to add, would be saying it out loud to someone else. You know, when you say it out loud, there's just a shift in your mind and the power of it, you know, and hopefully it's going in the right direction. And then by sharing it with someone else,
right,
that recognizing it, sharing with someone else is another next step. I mean, I suppose some people go from recognizing something's a problem to then taking a next step to change that. That can totally be a great thing that people can do.
Right.
I think for myself, that it was slower steps for me in recognizing that there was a problem, saying it out loud, and then that struggle to figure out how to take steps forward, how to get help and stuff like that. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I've heard people describe alcoholism as a disease that the main symptom of it is it tells you there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
So to actually acknowledge and accept that right. you have a problem, it can be extremely difficult for someone yeah. who's an active alcoholic.
Yeah, and it was my experience that there were a lot of reasons why I used the way that I did with substances. And so in my mind, it was like, well, but I can't not have these things because then I wouldn't function right. I need to be able to do, you know, A, B, and C.
Right.
And so that really clouded, I think, that idea that this wasn't good for me and I needed to shift. I stayed in the, well, my body hurts too much and I need to have energy to take care of the things I need to do in the day or to work, and ignoring the part of how living that way and that there were other options that I could have turned to.
Right, absolutely.
It took me a long time to recognize that I needed to make a change, a complete change.
Yeah. Okay, this on to the second
yeah.
R, responsibility, which they define as taking ownership of actions and their consequences. Now, in AA, we talk about doing a four-step inventory, a fearless and thorough moral inventory. And in that process, we look at our resentments primarily, and we look for our part in it, which is, you know, taking ownership of what our part in is it. And then in the fifth step, we also look at what the consequences of that can be. Mm-hmm. And then later on, we do a thing where we're making amends, but that's covered later in this. But yeah, taking ownership, that can be a real tricky thing. I can't think of how many people I have met in my program and just out there in the wild who will constantly blame the system, the government, the police, my wife, my mom, my family, for their actions that they take, which are detrimental to them and their relationship with those people or those institutions. And, you know, it's like, oh, I got a DUI and now the cops follow me all over town when I'm driving and, or they stop me for no reason. Well, yeah, they probably stop you for a reason. One, you've been caught. And maybe in your interaction with the officer at that time, you know, you didn't express any remorse for your actions and, maybe took a swing at them. So yeah, there's probably a good reason generated by you,
that they are
keeping an eye on you more than they would somebody else.
Yeah. I think it comes to me that, again, it's been my experience that taking responsibility for things actually empowers me to make better choices and live a better life. Because if there's things happening with, like, say, another person that I'm living with or whatever it may be, being able to address the actual issue and make choices, you know what I mean? Things aren't easy. Situations can be very difficult and very layered and things like that. And, I didn't always know the answer to what that would look like to be able to work things out or make changes that I needed to make. But I think honestly, taking responsibility for my choices, like I used to use or do different kinds of things because I was hurt or whatever things were going on. There were reasons, you know, like I'm in pain, I need to go to work, so I'm going to take some pills, all these kinds of things. But in actuality, my thinking was narrow. And today, being able to make better choices and turn to better things for me, it has to do with my faith and then my safe people that I'm around and doctors and things. But that really shifted me taking responsibility and going, there's different options. I have different options. And it took me a while to understand those kinds of options as I got around healthy people in recovery, you know, mm-hmm. that were making changes or were just pretty productive people in general, you know.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Getting back to taking care of myself.
Right.
But it sounds like taking responsibility sounds like it might be a hard thing, but it's beneficial.
Yeah. For me, taking ownership meant I had to take back ownership of a lot of things because I had abdicated all my familial responsibilities, you know, making sure bills are paid, the lawn's mowed, the garage is organized, there's gas in the vehicles, you know, all those things, emptying the dishwasher. I mean, could be, you know, very simple things, but I had pretty much abdicated all those responsibilities to someone else because doing any of those things interfered with what I wanted to do, what I felt I needed to do, mm-hmm. which was to obtain and use alcohol. Mm-hmm. So, you know, taking ownership back and realizing that, my wife would not let me have a debit card because I would have drained the bank account for booze. So I had to, you know, deal with the consequences of that for quite a while into sobriety.
Yeah.
You know, I would get my daily dollar to put in the AA basket, mm-hmm. you know, because I couldn't be trusted with more than a dollar, at a time. So yeah, that was, you know, one of the consequences. And until you really admit to yourself that these consequences that are happening to you are of your own choice. Generation. Yeah. You're getting what you deserve. It's like we were talking earlier, you know, people say, well, I want justice. And I say, no, I want mercy. Cause if I get justice, there's a whole lot of consequences that are going to go along with that.
Yeah. And I do want to throw something in here as we're talking about this. I want to say that I do understand that there can be a lot of people listening that have had, lives growing up as children, young adults, through the whole thing, whatever areas that have been awful, traumatizing, horrific. And that can be the story, you know, for people. And so I do understand and have compassion for turning to these kinds of things and trying to drown out all of that and not knowing what to do, being overwhelmed, being traumatized, depressed, whatever that can be. I do. I have my own experiences and I've seen other people as well. So I'm not in this, we're not trying to say, like, we don't get that. What we're trying to say is that, like, these are good steps to turning your life around. These are the things that we do in recovery that help us stay on our feet and move forward. And if anyone listening is still, you know, stuck in those things, I would say just try to find one person that you can go start talking to or getting help with. Because it's not like Johnny or I just got into recovery one day and then everything just got better.
Right.
That's not what we're trying to say.
Right. And that's not what happened.
It's not.
It was a buildup of many things. You know, I grew up in an alcoholic household. Big surprise that I turned into an alcoholic.
Right.
We learned from our environment. And, you know, that's one of the things that led to it. And it wasn't until after I put the plug in the jug, so to speak, that I was able to start looking at those things, those, you know, screaming, argument, fist fights, whatever, you know, that my parents got into, that, you know, formed this idea in me that the way to deal with those horrible things was to numb it out.
Right.
You know, instead of facing it. But, you know, at 5 years old, you only have certain tools to deal with, you know. You know, like in your case, the death of your father unexpectedly at a young age. Yeah. I mean, you know, it wasn't that long ago. I mean, it was longer ago for me growing up because I'm a bit older than you. But even at your age, you know, it wasn't the first thought to, oh, gee, you know, maybe my children could use some counseling after this event.
Right.
You know, or to be able to talk to someone, or, you know, your mother's ability to sit down and talk to you about it, because she was traumatized as well.
For real.
You know, so it's, yeah, not to confuse the fact that there are, you know, many mitigating factors that, you know, enter into someone's travel through, you know, mental health issues and into addiction. I mean, how many people do I know that not only do they have addiction issues, but they have mental or behavioral health conditions, right, mm-hmm, that need to be addressed?
Absolutely. And right, and we were talking a little bit about that before the show started, about, you know, the need for counselors and other professionals to help in this area.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
It's definitely something in demand, and there's a shortage.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just had to throw that in there as we were, you know, presenting the three R's of recovery, just so that, yeah, our audience knew that we speak on this because we've had experience and because we've, right, climbed out of the trenches.
Right. And you know, whenever I noticed that when I, at my last job, I had to teach people technical stuff. And I really had to be cautious to be aware of where they're coming from. Mm. I mean, I was teaching people who had literally never used computers, how to use a computer. You know,
he did this for me too. you and Sherry.
Yeah. So, you know, I couldn't just assume that they understood it how I understood it growing up in my professional career, you know, working with computers. Integrated circuits, yeah, and all that stuff. So, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, when I speak, I realize I'm coming from a place of familiarity that other people might not have. So thank you for bringing that into the discussion. And moving on, regret, expressing remorse for past behavior and its impact on others. And this is kind of a big one.
Yeah.
And it has in this explanation that I have for remorse, that I kind of went in depth on it because A, I'm a nerd, and B, language is important to me, and really understanding what words mean.
Yeah.
You know, I found, even though I'm turning 70 this year, I sometimes have to look words up because they may make sense in the context of a sentence, but to really fully understand the term, you really sometimes need to go and look it up.
Yeah, I like that.
So
I think it's good.
In remorse, definition is, to feel remorse means to experience deep regret and guilt for a wrong action or deed committed in the past. It's a strong feeling of sadness and distress caused by the awareness of having done something morally wrong. And to go even deeper in there, because they use regret, they use the word regret, and regret is to feel sad, repentant, or disappointed over something that has happened or been done, especially a lost or missed opportunity. Then there's a word repentant in that sentence, and repentant means expressing or feeling sincere regret and remorse, or being remorseful. So here we're back to remorse again. Mm-hmm. Also, prior, they talk about guilt, and guilt is a feeling of worry or unhappiness that you have because you have done something wrong, such as causing harm to another person. Mm-hmm. And then finally, they say, caused by the awareness of having something morally wrong. Well, what are morals? Morals are a person's standards of behavior or beliefs concerning what is and is not acceptable for them to do. So, you know, just unpacking, you know, the word remorse and all that goes into it, it is, to me, is pretty significant.
It is.
Like I was sharing with you earlier, you know, the word repentant, you know, that's something people typically associate with a religious belief, mm-hmm. Because the Bible talks about repentance mm-hmm. over and over again.
Very much so.
But to understand that it's expressing or feeling sincere regret and remorse,
yeah.
or feeling remorseful, doesn't have a connotation, a religious or biblical connotation. It describes really feelings.
It does.
You know?
And it can be important to understand what this means, especially in relationship with your family or your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. So we're feeling sad. And each one of these, you know, relates to some sort of like guilt, feeling of worry or unhappiness. You know, it all comes down to it's really defined by a person's morals. And when we get to a person's morals, there's a whole kettle of fish for me to unpack there, mm-hmm. because I had moral convictions galore. I'm not going to drink and drive. Well, I had kind of had to adjust my morals so I could get home from when I was drinking. Mm-hmm. I'm never going to do this thing or that thing. But if it got in the way of my drinking, then maybe I had to shift my morals or, mm-hmm. you know, degrade them a little bit. Until it finally got to a point where I was what I would call morally bankrupt. In a position where anything goes, mm-hmm. anything goes, whatever it takes
because of that priority shift. I mean, typically people's priorities are like, take good care of yourself, take care of your family, do a good job at work, have high integrity, all those kinds of things. But for me, putting the use of substances first to start the day, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's really a shift. And in that, my morals definitely shift, unfortunately. Like you said, bankrupt.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And once you, you know, hit the bottom, so to speak, like we talk about in AA, you know hitting rock bottom, all those things start flooding back in. And the regret is incredible. I mean, it drives a lot of people to suicide because... How can I go on now that I don't have alcohol to deal with the regret mm-hmm. or the moral failings? How am I going to live? And, you know, and how can I possibly make up for this?
Right.
You know, either in, you know, a religious sense of, you know, that kind of spiritual outlook or just from a, you know, how do I face my friends now? Mm-hmm. You know, the ones that I've hurt, the family members I've hurt.
It makes me, I hope this winds up being appropriate, but it makes me think of my mom saying, I think I was probably like 10. She's like, Jesus is really important for people who, you know, children and alcoholics, or, you know, she was like drunks and children.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
'Cause I was thinking of just how, for me, and I just want to say I respect everyone's views, whether you have faith or not, or whatever that looks like. That's not what I'm trying to say. But for me, it's really important to have God's grace and mercy in my situation so that I can wake up every day, because I did really fail in my family. And so that's really hard. And so it was through, you know, accepting Jesus as my Savior, being forgiven, getting a new life, being guided by the Holy Spirit, that I can stand today and not just be drowned by the things that I did in the past. I will say this. There are, unfortunately, because of things that happened, my failures through addiction have affected my children and other family members. And so that is far-reaching. I do live in an amends of doing better today, but there are things that pop up, you know, and those things are hard.
Sure.
And I'm aware of that, and they suck. But I don't have to carry everything. No. But when my kids are struggling or someone in my family, that is hard. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And
I hope that made sense.
Yeah, no, it does make sense. And, you know, to have the regrets is one thing, but to express remorse for them is another thing altogether. Again, this leads into the, ninth step of AA, where we go and we make amends. Mm-hmm. We turn those regrets into positive actions by going in and to those people or institutions and admitting our wrongs, and then offering to do whatever we can to right the wrong, to amend the story, to try and right things. And they talk about it in their next R, which is restitution. And that's making amends for harm caused and taking steps to restore what was damaged. I kind of like the way they say that.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
And I did a little deep dive on the word restitution. And it comes to amends, which is to take actions to correct a mistake, repair a damage, or compensate for a loss or injury that was caused. It goes beyond a simple apology and involves taking steps to restore balance and make things right. Now, of course, there are certain things, going straight to the end of that, that we can never make right. For example, murder. We can never fully right that because we can't resurrect a dead person. We're not capable of that.
That's true.
But in most other cases, we can either make an attempt to write something or work not to repeat that harm.
That's what I was going to say, yeah.
And that kind of comes into, when we're talking about, and you just laid it out eloquently, harms done to family. Mm-hmm. We can't go back and change what we did.
Right.
But we can change who we are today.
Yeah.
And make what in AA we call a living amends, which is I'm going to work to be a better person every day.
Right.
And that's really the best we can hope for.
It is. And I do want to say that it comes to mind with that, as you're changing the way that you interact with other people and yourself, that really does affect the people around you and your family members in a positive way, I think. At least that's been my experience. For them mm-hmm. to see me come out of where I used to be into who I am today can be really powerful. And I also just wanted to add that for me, I try to keep in mind that if someone needs to talk to me about, well, anything that happens now, but anything that happened before, and I hope that they do it in an okay way, but still, however they do it, that I would keep my heart and my ears open to being able to hear what they have to say. I have sat in on, or I have participated in some counseling with my middle daughter, and being able to, talk through some things, and then also just, her and I and other family members have as well. And so that ability to try to sit with someone as they share about something that happened in the past, mm-hmm. And the pain that may have caused, to be able to talk that out.
Right.
I think can be really helpful,
Right. No, absolutely.
Maybe give them some forewarning if you can.
Yeah,
hey,
right.
Hey, I got to talk to you about something really hard that you did.
Yeah, right.
Do you want some water? Let's sit with some water.
or that I did, or
Yeah. I mean, if you're gonna talk to somebody about that, maybe try to set it up as, a little bit of forewarning, so you can sit without distractions.
Yeah. Exactly. The four most terrifying words my wife uses in our relationship are "we need to talk." Yeah. Because that's about as much forewarning as I get. But nonetheless, are you willing to talk? There are a lot of ways to approach it. And I followed the point you're making, which is, these things can hardly be breached in a vacuum, so to speak. There needs to be the right time, the right place.
It can really help. It really can.
To do these things. And in AA, when we talk about making amends to people, we spend a lot of time talking about each individual amend.
Yeah.
Because they're all different. You could be trying to make an amend to a coworker because you constantly downgraded them and called them stupid and ineffective and, adversely affected their opportunities, within the company or whatever. And then there's the, you know, amend that you may have to make to society where you rob somebody, and the proper amend is to go to the authorities and admit you're wrong and offer yourself up to, you know, take your punishment that you deserve in that scenario. Mm-hmm. And somebody was sharing the other day that the last time they were in jail, they were in a cell with a fellow who was, you know, had a strong AA program, had been in it for many years, and finally was facing up to one of his harms that he had done and was on his way to prison for 2 years. So, you know, making amends can be as easy as, or as simple, they're never easy, but it can be as simple as going to someone and saying, hey, you know, I treated you really badly, and I shouldn't have done that, and what can I do to make it right? As opposed to, here I am, Your Honor, I'm confessing that I did this thing, and I need to throw myself on the mercy of the court and do whatever you decide you want me to do. So, and it can be so nuanced in between it all, you know. Oh, I stole a pen from my employer. Do we really need to make an amends for that? Or do we need to just like drop a bunch of pens off somewhere, you know? And again, you know, sometimes it's a living amends.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just, I can't change the 40 years of my drunkenness with my family. I can't go back and change any of that, but I can change for today.
Yeah. And I think that part of like volunteerism and helping others, you know, is definitely a good way to give back for sure.
Right.
I wanted to say that I do think it's really awesome that an AANA or any kind of 12 step or, you know, other kinds of programs that you do that amends, that a lot of times you get to actually talk out with someone like, okay, I did this, I'm going to go talk to this person, I'm going to maybe say this. Sometimes people practice it, sometimes they don't. But I think that there's that cool insight of someone else who's done this before who could say, that sounds really great, I love that you ran that through with me. This amends, maybe you can't go do it in person because it could harm their family or their situation or something like that. Someone else's eyes and ears and something, I think, is really cool. And that's another thing that's really great about like the 12 steps or programs, is that you get this like trial run as you're learning how to go through the process of recovery and doing these steps. And then after that, typically, I mean, and you can keep doing it with your sponsor or whoever, but then you kind of start to learn how to do those things on your own. And you know when to ask for someone else's opinion and something, or if you need to talk it through. But it's that initial, like, first go through that's really great to do with someone else. That's awesome. Yeah, and community is so nice. And you can still be in community and share what you're doing. But I just love how in it, it talks about, unless it's going to harm someone, or you know what I mean?
Right.
And then in those cases, you know, you can do a letter, or you can share it with God, or, you know, just
exactly.
Do what you can so you don't cause more pain.
Right. In one example they use in the big book, they talk about, because we also do a sex inventory, because it's one of the base instincts that we let run wild occasionally in our addiction. And they talk about, well, if, you know, if the wife in general knows that you've been, as they say, wild, you know, maybe best for just both parties to admit that was the case and move on.
Right. Maybe not get into details.
Right. And, but and then, if the person
stay
is
away from
going
those
to,
women.
Yeah, if the person making the amends wants to be more specific, you know, I had an affair. It wasn't fair to you, blah, blah, blah. They say, you know, we shouldn't involve the other person, you know, by name, because that will, you know, could invoke, you know, a jealous retaliation by the other person.
Sure.
'Cause this goes both ways, you know, men and women cheat.
Right. That's true.
And for a variety of reasons. A lot of it has to do with loneliness, you know, that befalls addicts and alcoholics as people pull away from them. But anyway, it does say, you know, maybe best to leave them out. And, you know, the ninth step specifically says, may direct amends to others, except when to do so would injure them or others. So to admit something that you did to someone, in that admission would harm them more.
Right.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, and I feel
it's,
like...
It's
in that is that...
It's okay to avoid that direct amends by doing something else.
Right. I agree. And in that, you know, moving forward into that, like a living amends where you're making better choices, mm-hmm. not falling back into that. And yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Then moving on, recovery planning.
Yeah.
You know, developing a structured plan for recovery, including treatment, therapy, and support. And, you know, from my experience and with people I know in my program, you know, treatment it is a big thing now. Back when I got sober, it was like either the Betty Ford Center or, you know, shock therapy, or that, you know, what do they call it? It's type of therapy where they would inject you with a drug called Anabuse, which if you use alcohol, it make you physically ill.
If you drink. I think they do something like that now.
It still exists. And then they open a bar up there and you can drink whatever you want and you get violently ill. I think they do something
now where you can get something once a month. I think it keeps you from drinking, though.
Right.
Because it has, I don't know if it's a negative effect or it just doesn't work.
Yeah,
it's once a month something.
Yeah, it makes you ill. Anabuse. It's actually a daily pill.
Yeah.
It's an old thing. Aversion therapy. Mm. That's what they call it. But now most of the people I've talked to have been through what's lovingly called a 30-day spin dry. Or a 28-day program or whatever. Most of those anymore are based in 12-step recovery. Although, you know, they go into the scientific end of it, which mm-hmm. we don't spend a lot of time on in AA, mainly because our book was written in the
30s. Right, and they have the neuroscience back then.
Yeah,
I mean, you can do some diving into that just on the internet.
Right.
It's very fascinating.
And there are, you know, it's valid. There is a good reason to look at that to, you know, help you understand the whys, where in the AA big book, it pretty much just says, well, this is the way it is, and we don't need to understand why beyond, you know, accepting that this is really the way it is.
Right.
This is what happens when alcohol hits your brain. We call it an allergy, which drives us to drink more and more and more once we take that first drink. But not so much the case anymore. And treatment is really a good idea, you know, especially if you're pretty heavy into alcohol or drug abuse, even mental health, so that you know, for addicts and alcoholics to go through withdrawals under controlled conditions, because alcoholic withdrawal is about the only withdrawal that can actually kill you in the process because of the seizures that happen. Heroin, not so much. You'll wish for death, but...
Opiates, you can definitely know some people that winded up being sent from the Lehtal jail to the hospital.
Right.
Yeah. So some things can be pretty nasty to go through. Just wanted to also mention that, you know, we can help out. This is like the area of my job, I feel like. And so if you're looking for some recovery planning, you can come to the Lehtal recovery community.
Right.
And we can help out with that.
Yeah. Right. And
there's
just
many pathways. And well, we won't push you in any direction. I do hear what you're saying. For me, you know, I had like a month where I could not get a hold of anything. And I think that was actually really, really helpful. That's part of it. You know what I mean? You're working on things while you're in treatment, but you also can't go do those things. So.
Right, exactly.
Gives you a lot of support. But there's lots of different options.
And I want to back up to that little hiccup when you almost said Lehtal Recovery Community
Center. Yes, I guess we should talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have a rebranding. And if you drive down Main Street and see our new sign, that would be awesome. It's very pretty. I like it. And we have switched to the Latah Recovery Community. And we've taken off center. Although, as Johnny pointed out before we started, it does say Center for Peer Support at the bottom. So.
Right, right. So we're still getting used to dropping the word center.
Yes.
But our initials stay the same, LRC, so that makes it convenient.
It does.
But, you know, back to topic.
Yeah,
therapy, it points out, is good. And that can be, you know, therapy ranges a lot of things from talking about your situation and your, you know, in therapy, we identify what a problem is or a situation is or a feeling is. And then hopefully we work on resolving that somehow or another. And that's what, you know, recovery coaching, peer-to-peer coaching is all about. It's about not just identifying it, but, you know, how do we work towards a resolution to that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, support is huge. You know, in AA, we have the fellowship. We have meetings. I've made fast friends. You know, I've got probably a couple hundred phone numbers in my telephone, and all I would have to do is send out a text that said, help.
Yeah, everyone would show up at your
The roads coming into Moscow would be clogged from every direction.
Next time there's traffic, I'm going to be like, oh, gosh, yes, I hope Johnny's okay.
That is kind of
funny. That's
what
happens when you're in recovery for 30 years. You have a bunch of friends that will come over and check on you.
Yeah, and that's also, you know, that's also, you know, the support that you get here.
You have a coach
or a peer that you work with, and hopefully you build that community as well.
So important to have new friends who have, you know, will be supportive and understanding and won't bring things around you that shouldn't be.
Right, exactly. And then we move on to the last two, relapse prevention, which is implementing strategies to avoid returning to old behaviors and maintaining sobriety. And like I've heard said, you know, people say, I've got to change my playmates and my sandbox.
Yep.
Certainly, you know, hanging out with the people you used to. I know a lot of people who, when they got sober, their whole social structure centered around a bar. And they've tried going in there and just like drinking coffee or soda pop, and they find that doesn't work. And there's another one of the old AA sayings that if you hang out in a barbershop long enough, you're going to get a haircut.
Right.
And having to change all that is not only problematic because where do I go from here, but it's also you're going to have some grief over it because you're losing out on all those things. Although personally, I think going into a bar for me reminds me all the time, because I go into bars when I have a reason to be there. And to see all these people, you know, some are having fun and some just look depressed and helpless and hopeless. And I just want to go up and put my arm around them and, you know, ask if they're okay.
Right.
But it's not, you know, it's not the place where I want to be as part of my social structure anymore.
Sure.
And I have meetings I can go to, you know, and I can be around people that are helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Supportive.
Very important.
And we could go way deeper into that, but we're getting close to the end here. So I want to hit reconnection, which is defined as building a supportive network of individuals who understand and encourage recovery. Well, for me, that's the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when people come in and they hear us share our stories of what it was like out there, they can look at it and say, wow, me too. You know, these people actually know what they're talking about. And we can honestly look someone in the face and say, I know how you're feeling. I've sat in that chair that first time into a meeting.
Right.
And I know the fear that is gripping you right now.
Yeah.
And I cried too, you know, admitting that I was finally admitting honestly to myself that I was alcoholic.
Yeah, and so, that's another thing that we do here too. It's, you know, help build your new community in recovery so that you can succeed. And that's individual. That's, you know, we talk about the different kinds of things that we know of, and you decide what you would like.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and we also here have, you know, events, things, movie nights, painting classes, yoga classes, and all those events are opportunities to connect with somebody else.
They are.
And, you know, somebody who could have a positive effect on your life.
Mm-hmm. Yep, you know? Meeting new people, doing new things. I remember being new in recovery and being like, I don't know how to do this because fun was always along with the other things that I'm not doing anymore. And so it took me a little while to figure out how to do life, still have fun.
Right.
It's a little bit of a transition, not going to lie. Yeah.
Yeah. My our old motto amongst my crew back in the days was, let's get all messed up and then ... add your potential tragic ending here, which sometimes it was and sometimes it wasn't.
Yeah,
but
that's fair.
Yeah, so reconnection is important. And, you know, that's family as well. I mean, there are a lot of things that can be reconnected in recovery that otherwise might just go to the wayside.
Yeah. Thank you, Johnny. That was good.
You're welcome.
You picked a good topic.
We made it all the way through the seven R's.
We did.
So it's kind of a cool thing. And if you want to learn more about the seven R's or recovery, come on down to the Latah Recovery Community at 531 South Main or 226 East Main in Pullman. And talk with Denise or someone like Denise and let us work the seven R's with you.
Day is over in Pullman, and she's amazing. I'm super excited for the Pullman-Whitman area to have the new center over there, and they're doing amazing things with what they're putting on their calendar, and what a great coach Day is. It's just, you should check it out.
Definitely. So I'll close it out with my usual, you know, if you think you have a problem with substances or behavioral health problems, you do.